Hello, hello. It is, in fact, another Tuesday. My name is Lynn, and you're tuned into CGSF 90.1 FM. We're broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, BC. Today's thesis is, why is Hum the most underrated band of the 90s? And the credit that they're due through their entire catalog is the credit that's given to Smashing Pumpkins. Very controversial, I know. This is primarily going to be a Hum deep dive, but we'll talk about Smashing Pumpkins. First of all, if you don't know Hum, you've definitely heard this song before that I'm about to load up here. You get the point. I'm also going to play this little clip from a Howard Stern interview they did because they're just so adorable. And then we're going to talk about them, of course.
No, well, people, you know, you should be good to people, and when you're not, they like flip out, and then...
And then you can't even deal with it.
They can't deal with it, and then they're out back, and...
She missed... the train to Mars. She's out there counting stars because, you know, she really believes in this Mars concept. And everyone knows, you know, it's about people who believe in junk that's never going to happen for them, but they still stand out there, man, and they're still waiting for it to happen.
That's nice.
It's like so many people I've met who just think they're going to be like, so like all these guys in college were going to be radio stars and everything. Mm. They all worked at my college radio station, and then all of them. Or are you just trying to appease me?
You're pretty close.
Who'd you write this about? Do you know a girl who you were actually thinking about?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And what, she wouldn't go out with you or something?
No, not anymore, probably. So.
Was she like a mental case and it's like she didn't know what the hell was going on?
No, it's just, it's more of a song. Well, I can tell you what song means to me.
Go ahead.
Yes, but please
I
do.
I like your angle on it because it's sort of like that, but it's about a... Well, now that you got all the lyrics written down, you can kind of...
Yeah, but what do you think it's about?
Well, I think it's about just like, you know...
Cool.
People...
people he's a rock star.
Yeah, people like what?
No, well, people, you know, you should be good to people, and when you're not, they like flip out, and then...
And then you can't even deal with it.
They can't deal with it, and then they're out back, and...
Yeah.
Whatever.
My interpretation
is better.
Her
heart was broken, is what you're saying?
Right, her heart was broken.
Is that what you're saying?
It's like her brain was broken. All her chemicals aren't firing right.
Like Fred, right?
Wasn't that cute? That was Matt Tailbot, the frontman. We're going to get into him in a moment. So, you heard the song. You heard the little clip. What is Hum? So, they are from Champaign, Illinois. They formed in 1989. They are very often used an example of early American shoegaze. So yeah, we have lead vocalist and founder, Mac Tailbot. He plays rhythm guitar. The other original founding member is Andy Switsky, who met Matt Tailbot at the cafe he worked at in Urbana, Illinois, while they were in school. And they kind of just talked about music, and then they eventually decided, let's start a band. The lineup changed over time, and Tailbot is the only core member that's remained amongst all of those changes. But the main lineup is, as we know, Matt Tailbot, Jim Dempsey, Tim Lash, Jason Gerken, and Brent St. Pair, who just passed away recently. It was very tragic. Their very first demo was actually made in Steve Albini's basement, if you know him. Nirvana, Breeders, very, very famous audio engineer. Their track Kissing Me, I believe, in fact, was one of the demos that they did. And so Hum actually used to be fronted by Switsky early on, but then they kind of went back and forth, and then Switsky left the band, and then it became Tailbot. We're going to be talking about their five releases: Fill It Show, 2000, their most well-known, You'd Prefer an Astronaut, Downward is Heaven Earth, and Inlet. Bands like Deftones cite Hum as one of their biggest influences. So many bands will cite them. Deafhaven, I know Narrowhead, were any of those like new gaze bands definitely draw from Hum because of their heavy sound. And okay, great. So that's Hum, you know, a little bit about them. Let's talk about Smashing Pumpkins. Smashing Pumpkins formed around the same time in Chicago, and I believe, please forgive me, I'm not from Illinois. I don't know geography very well. But Chicago and Champaign are cities that are relatively close together. We all know Billy Corgan. I'm sure you've heard of him. I don't know the remaining members of Smashing Pumpkins, but
All you need to know is we're not like every other band, and we think different, we play different, and in the end, we are different. So I don't know. We're not. We don't like to classify ourselves as any one style because we don't think we are. We think the days of being just a rock band are over, and that's all you need to know.
That was Billy Corgan talking about Smashing Pumpkins. You know, we're just so different. We're not like other girls. We're Smashing Pumpkins. I cannot stand him. You've probably heard of Smashing Pumpkins before, and we're going to listen to the song Share Up Rock in a moment here. But let me talk about why I don't like Smashing Pumpkins and why they're probably one of the most overrated bands of the 90s and beyond. I don't really like Billy Corgan. I don't resonate with their songwriting, and I think their sound falls flat on its butt. I don't think they were doing anything innovative, because if they were truly innovating, as they said, they would probably sound a lot heavier than they do. The two Smashing Pumpkins albums people know best are Siamese Dream and Melancholy. Also very different albums, but we're going to focus on Siamese Dream for the purpose of looking at the grunge gaze genre, which is basically just grunge shoegaze fusion. I was going to do a whole episode, and I might at a later point, about the grunge gaze, heavy shoegaze variety of shoegaze, but these are pretty defining bands, I think, of that genre, especially the earlier on side of that genre. Anyways, neither of those albums are particularly interesting in my opinion, but Siamese Dream is often cited for its heavy, distorted, reverbed guitar tones. And so many people have asked me, Lynn, are Smashing Pumpkins shoegaze? The answer is yes, unfortunately. I really wish I might even put together a shoegaze flowchart. Does something involve fuzz, distortion, reverb, and form a wall of sound, then yes, it's shoegaze. If it doesn't, then no, it's not. Shoegaze doesn't just have to be MBV or slow dive. Next week, we're going to be talking about the roots of shoegaze so you have a better understanding from a historical and also technical side of things. Shoegaze is a genre that can be many genres, and I really want you to keep that in mind. But we're going to listen to Share Up Rock, just so you have a bit of context.
We'll be right back.
So yeah, that was Smashing Pumpkins with Cher Brock from Siamese Dream. Just a little flavor. I gotta say, I hate Smashing Pumpkins, but I do really love that song. I remember, I think I was like a kid and I played Guitar Hero 3 for the first time and I was like, oh, this song is so sick. I love it. But also, okay, here's the thing is what you're gonna find is they sound a lot like Hum, and you will, at the end of this episode, realize that Hum sounds 10 times better than they do. You associate Smashing Pumpkins with those like really heavy, distorted walls of sound. I think that is what most people would think when they think Smashing Pumpkins. I think that's why people typically like them. That's why they're a popular band right now. I'm not so sure for Melancholy. Honestly, I haven't listened to Melancholy in a while. I probably should have for this episode, but I just really don't like that album in particular. However, I did end up listening to Siamese Dream over again, and yeah, most of it is very mid, and that's probably the best song off of the album. But like I said, they are both from the same scene. Same time, they were friends. They toured together. They definitely have very similar sound. I would say a louder majority believes that Hum copied Smashing Pumpkins, but there is a quieter minority that believes it's the inverse of that. Even if you do believe that Smashing Pumpkins is what inspired Hum, you could definitely say that it's Hum that executes it better. And I think in terms of that grunge gaze sound, American shoegaze sound, whatever you want to call it, even though I think those things aren't interchangeable, but we're going to talk about that next episode when we talk about shoegaze classics. This is about Hum. And I don't know. I feel like people, a lot of people, like I said, ask me, Lynn, are Smashing Pumpkins shoegaze, because they think that is shoegaze, and it is. But we're going to talk about Hum, as I said. We're going to talk about gear for a moment. So I really love Hum, and I feel like they've influenced me a lot musically and just artistically. And so I found out about Matt Talbot's pedal board. He's rhythm guitar. He uses an MXR Phase 90 phaser. He uses a Dan Electro Milkshake Chorus, which I just bought. I have not tried it out yet. I'm very excited about it. It's a cheap little chorus pedal, but I'm seeing if I can still get those same sounds. And then most notably, he used the Boss Super Feedbacker and Distortion pedal. And honestly, you could achieve the same thing that he achieves, or even the same thing that whatever the guitarist from Smashing Pumpkins uses. Billy Corgan is one of them, I know that. I don't care enough about Smashing Pumpkins to look up all their band members. We only have an hour here. But yeah, Big Muff, especially like, you know, the older like Russian models of the Big Muff, that definitely is something that you can use to replicate that really big, heavy sound. And Tim's board, he used the Ibanez Power Lead Distortion at Phase 90. He used Boss Super Chorus, which is also a great chorus pedal. People think that's a lot better. Boss pedals vary, honestly, around the board good. And then the Tube Zone Overdrive. So that's basically their setup. They also used a lot of Orange amps. We're going to talk about Fill It Show for a moment. So Fill It Show is their first record. It was with Andy Switsky as the frontman. Matt was not. He sung on a couple songs, but it was mostly Andy. Very rough around the edges. They were definitely still figuring out their sound. It was recorded at Clubhouse Studios in Illinois. Very post-hardcore, very fast tempo, very raw. We're going to listen to just a clip of it because I really don't want to subject you to it all. I think it sucks. But it is where we're starting with. This is Formaldehyde. We'll be right back. Anyways, I've been talking about this band for 20 minutes already and haven't actually gotten into their discography, so let me hurry along there. So that was Andy's voice on Formaldehyde off of Fillet Show from 1991. Honestly, not a very good album, but it kind of established that heavy sound that they were going for. And so we're going to move on to Elektra 2000, which was from 1993, which notably same year as Siamese Dream by Smashing Pumpkins. It was produced by Brad Wood on Cargo Music, no singles, very grungy feel, but the first album where Matt Talbot is fronting. He does this really good, like, and he'll find a lot of Hum songs are like this hard, soft contrast well, especially with his vocals. But this is a lot more gritty, heavy metal, still in that post-hardcore realm that we heard, but a lot more polished than Fillet Show. Thank God Matt took over. You can definitely hear the inklings of what Hum will become here a bit more fleshed out. This is Sundress from Elektra 2000. That was Sundress off of Hum's Elektra 2000 from 1993. Yeah, so you can definitely hear that post-hardcore sound is still there, and I think it is kind of a common thread in a lot of Hum's work, but I think the backbone of it is really left there, and it kind of expands to a lot more of a spacey sound, and I think that's what people associate Hum being shoegazes. So we're gonna get into the album that defines that spacey sound. So this album, Elektra 2000, did really well. They ended up getting signed to RCA, so pretty big record label, and they put out You'd Prefer an Astronaut, 1995. I think everyone knows Hum for this particular album. That's, we were talking about Stars earlier. You heard them talking on Howard Stern about the song Stars. That's off of this album. That was the lead single off of this album. I think the other single was The Pod, also a great song. It didn't chart as well. So Stars actually made number 11 on the Billboard alternative charts when the song came out. There's just a lot of there's so much good feedback, but it's also so soft in some places, and they do contrast so well. And I think this is such a defining album for them. A lot of people call it their magnum opus, but we're gonna get into what I actually think their magnum opus is later in Lit. This is very much its own sound. Like, it's very spacey, but there's very much elements of shoegaze, but there's elements of post-hardcore, and there's elements of punk and grunge all fused into one. And this was their kind of meal ticket, but unfortunately it didn't pan out for them. But we're gonna listen to I Hate It Too off of You'd Prefer an Astronaut.
Ignites a twisted mess of foreign shapes and sounds. I wish the ceiling was the ground. I'll send you flowers made of silent tiny pieces of the sun to help me make up for this one. While you send me tidal waves of love when you're alone, and I can't remember what you do to find a way to turn the signal back to heaven sounding blue and bring me faithful back to you. We'll be right back.
So that was I Hate It Too off of You'd